Hello. Welcome to the Creative Shift podcast. I'm Helga Henry. Join me in this space for conversation with entrepreneurs, intellects, business leaders and policymakers. A couple of podcasts ago, we talked about the clever and lazy way of leadership that most effective leaders, particularly in the German army at the time, were characterised as clever and lazy. And that in the categories, specifically clever and hard-working people were absolutely singled out to be deputies and not leaders. Now, this may sound a little controversial, but I think women can often find themselves in what I'm going to call the clever and hard-working trap. They anticipate needs. They have attention to detail. They want to do a good job. And very often, they're people pleasers. These are things that society predominantly approves of in female behaviour. They're things that get you good brownie points for being a girl. But you know what? They're not necessarily the things that get you good brownie points for being a leader. All too often when I'm working with people who want to get on or working with new leaders, the thing I have to instill again and again is the ability to let go. The ability to delegate efficiently and delegate well. And delegate doesn't then mean give it to somebody and fret about it. Doesn't mean give it to somebody and micromanage them to within an inch of their life. That is clever and hard working. Clever and lazy is knowing the strengths of the people that you're going to delegate to, setting good and clear parameters, and then letting them get on with it. If you're interested in delegation, my colleague Andy Bass has some great tips in his articles on www.bassklusker.com. 7 steps to effective delegation using a format that he calls rewards. Effective delegation is what moves you from being clever and hardworking to clever and lazy. Because you know what? What you need to be able to do is take that step back and be strategic. There's 2 things about this. If you're effectively delegating and not micromanaging, you've just got more time to think. You've got more time to anticipate. Secondly, if you're being clever and lazy, you're giving people space, time, and capacity to grow into their roles. You're giving them, yeah, enough rope to hang themselves with, but also enough space and time to get good at their job without you fussing and chivying around them. So it becomes a virtuous circle. You do less of the detail work that takes up your time, and you have more time to think about the strategic, big picture, alliances, partnerships, and future gazing that's really going to move your business forward. It's not all women who get caught in this trap, and it's certainly not all leaders. But it's something that I've seen with a lot of women. So, let's say it again. Today, I'm going to be clever and lazy. Let's hear it for that. Hello and welcome to the Creative Shift podcast interview. I'm delighted to welcome Stuart Griffiths of Birmingham Hippodrome, our current chief exec, but not for long. Stuart, hi and welcome.
Hello, nice to be here.
Stuart, I wanted to talk to you briefly about your time at Birmingham Hippodrome, the shift that you've seen since you've been there, and what were the causes or what caused the shifts in the place when you arrived 12 years ago to the place it is today.
Okay, well, of course, I arrived just after we'd had this sort of enormous redevelopment. So the place had been completely transformed. It had been closed for 2 years as well. And, you know, it was previously hugely successful. And when it reopened, we had a sort of different kind of place on our hands, really. The core was probably still the same, but the audience may have, you know, gone away a little bit. We had to re-engage. We were dealing with a building which was about 50% bigger in terms of floor space than it was previously. And therefore cost considerably more, getting on for half as much again to run. And the kind of core business, which is people buying tickets to sit in the auditorium, was still exactly the same. And that's 80% of the Hippodrome's income. So we didn't have, in theory, any more income, but we had these considerably higher costs. So we kind of had to deal with that incrementally. We had a bit of a financial hole to fill as well, because we were underfunded when it came to the capital works. But I suppose the more interesting thing is how we developed that business model. And what we did was we tried to re-engage with the audience. We realised very quickly that, you know, it had done this once, so it could do it again. You know, we're in a big market in Birmingham. We reckon there's probably something over 4 million people within our reasonable catchment area. Mm-hmm. And it was a matter of re-engaging with those people, getting the core business back to where it should be. And that meant investment. That meant persuading the producers who bring shows to the theatre that they needed to spend more to penetrate that market.
So that's
properly.
Just more on marketing, spending more on getting people back into the theatre to see how beautiful it was and what a great time they were going to have there.
Yeah, absolutely. And giving them a great experience when they got there and so forth. And, you know, there was some scepticism from people who loved the old Hippodrome. You know, would the new one meet their expectations and so forth? So there was a lot of that went on, and additional investment. I think we had to persuade producers that who hadn't had to spend that much previously, because there was continuity. We had to sort of start again in lots of ways. So that was the kind of the core, and that took, you know, 2, 3, 4 years really to achieve. I always remember saying at the time that we had the first tour of Miss Saigon that was a really long tour. And that was almost like the start of the beginning, because it brought an awful lot of people back to us and back to the database. So in a position where we could market to them and sell the next thing. It's theatre is a lot about kind of establishing momentum. You know, you sell one thing into the next thing. You don't want a gap. You don't want a hiatus, because then people do other things. And that's what had happened. So we had to recreate that momentum. And at the same time, we had to develop sort of other income streams. So we took catering back in-house from an outside company, so we could hopefully earn more money from it, or retain more money from it. We developed a business around conference and meeting rooms and space and so forth that we hadn't done previously. And we brought in a whole range of sort of smaller potential income streams, which eventually some of them worked, some of them didn't, and eventually they came together to create a model that after, you know, 3, 4, 5 years began to sort of work again, began to create surpluses, and then the thing starts to roll and you can build on that and cut the things out that aren't working and build the things on the things that are.
So it's interesting because obviously you run an arts organisation, a theatre, but what you've been talking about is some quite hard-nosed business. So where's the creativity? When I say where's the creativity in that, I understand that Birmingham Hippodrome is a very creative organisation. Where for you has been the creativity in producing this shift in the performance of the theatre?
Yeah, well, absolutely, it has to be a business first and foremost, otherwise it doesn't work. We're not funded. The Hippodrome has never been funded, never wanted to be funded, always valued its independence and its freedom because of that. So absolutely, the core business had to work first. And once we got that going, then that produced the surpluses that allowed us as a charity to only reinvest back in the organisation. And that meant investing in new creative streams, if you like, one of which was bringing in international work, not because it was international necessarily per se, but because I always said when the rebuilt Hippodrome had these fantastic facilities to be able to stage virtually anything in the world, really, that therefore we shouldn't therefore only choose our programme from a kind of provincial or a UK market only.
Yeah.
Lots of good stuff happening in the UK, but we had the capacity then to choose a programme effectively from anywhere in the world. So if you want to put the best shows on your one of the best stages in the country, you've really got to go out there and re-engage. You know, the internet and communications helps enormously over the last sort of 20 years to make that happen. So we introduced new programming. We eventually re-established and re-energised all our sort of learning and engagement activities, and that's extended towards now creating quite a lot of new work, some of which is outdoors, some of which is in other art forms like visual art and so forth. Anything really that makes the Hippodrome's profile more interesting, more substantial, enables us to engage with the widest possible market, with the most diverse market we can, because at the end of the day, the more people we can engage with, the more successful we're likely to be.
Mm-hmm. And so that's obviously about creative products, but also I think unusual. Well, I think a lot of arts organisations are going to have to follow suit, but actually looking fairly critically at your assets and creating income streams out of them is a business creative act, as well as the explicit creativity of international work, the dance festival, and the work, as you say, of education and learning and what's now Hippodrome Plus. I haven't got much more time, but I'm conscious also that the theatre is about to shift again, really, as you move on. Do you want to tell us a little bit about where you're going and what you're personally looking forward to in terms of shifts in your career and what you foresee perhaps for Birmingham Hippodrome's future?
Yeah, well, I've been there just over 12 years, so it kind of feels like the right time to be moving on. I hope, you know, there's still loads to do, and part of me would dearly love to still be here doing that and enjoying it very much, and as I have every day of my sort of 12 years here. And I'll, you know, it'll be a huge wrench to leave. It'll be a huge wrench to leave Birmingham, and particularly the sort of creative and cultural network of people that are really, you know, the sort of friendships and the inspiration that comes from that and so forth. But it feels like it's someone else's turn. I think we can be somewhere for too long. And yeah. Therefore, this is an opportunity for me to sort of go and work for a large commercial theatre company who have a number of theatres both in the West End and in the UK and some around the world now, and in a sort of programming capacity. So that's a new challenge, which is I'm looking forward to, which will be interesting. But I'm still, you know, broadly in the same business, so yeah. I'll still stay connected. And I, you know, I think the Hippodrome's future is very bright. I mean, thankfully, we're not in a position that we're having to cope with declining income through public funding, because we've never been in that position. So obviously, we're part of a wider, you know, interconnected web of companies that do depend on public funding, and absolutely that's right, and we're able to present that work, and I'd hate to, you know, lose any of those elements, like you know, people like Birmingham Royal Ballet and Welsh National Opera and so forth are absolutely key to our model. So we are impacted, but we're not directly, we don't have to fight those battles all the time, which are so time consuming and energy sapping. We can look at, you know, every day we can look at a sort of new way of doing something, or a new way of creating more interest or income, or trying something out and so forth. We're in that very kind of privileged position. So I think as an organisation, we're in a very healthy place with reserves and so forth, so that we can try things out, try new things. If they don't quite work, we can try something else, but it's not the end of the world. And I think that's what's enabled us to really develop the model that we've got now, because not everything we've done has worked, but we've been able to
withstand things when
they don't.
That's one of the benefits of stability. So final question, it might not be fair, but it may be instructive. Looking back, what would you like to tell the you of 10 or 12 years ago? Is there anything that you wish, from your perspective now, if you looked back, that you'd tell Stuart then?
Well, I suppose it's that it can be done, that, you know, just keep at it, because, you know, there were times over that period where I really thought it wasn't going to go right. Yeah. And you really, you know, woke up every morning looking at the sales figures and thinking, my God, this isn't going to come right. But that I think if you've got a resource of the quality and the history and the kind of the love that people have for a place like the Hippodrome that's been there for such a long time and been part of Birmingham for so long, then, you know, it will come right in the end. And, you know, stick at it and try everything. And, you know, hopefully a decent proportion of those things you try will work, and therefore they'll gradually accumulate to something that you can create a model that is then sustainable.
Mm-hmm. It also sounds like great advice for your next for your successor, who's going to be Fiona Allen from The Curve. You know, rely on the that fantastic resource and the love that is there for the Birmingham
Hippodrome. Yeah, yeah.
And try new things and see where they go and keep the faith. Really.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. That's there. It's a fantastic sort of bedrock and something that you can really utilise. And Fiona will bring a whole heap of new ideas to that and new things to try and so forth as well. So she'll have a great time, I think.
Thank you. Well, on a personal note, it's really fantastic that you've come today. Here to Highbury Studios to be interviewed. It'll be a very sad day, but Stuart has been absolutely instrumental in Creative Shift being what it is today, specifically being at Birmingham Hippodrome, but also in terms of its name and our focus on the focus of our work right now. So, Stuart, the very best of luck. I know this is au revoir and not adieu. So keep in touch with Creative Shift and Birmingham Hippodrome, and I really hope that it goes remarkably well at your new role at Ambassadors Theatre Group. And thanks so much for coming and joining us today.
Thank you.
As you know, we like to end our podcast with a little bit of a rant about something I feel strongly about. And I guess what I wanted to talk about was going to events where, in particular, people have accepted with Eventbrite, but I think it's actually very common generally. What I'm noticing more and more these days is that more people accept an invitation to an event than actually go. Oh, side rant, it's invitation, not invite. Don't give me an invite to go somewhere. Give me an invitation. I'm sorry, I know I'm a grammar pedant, I know I should be put up against a wall and shot because of that, but they're not invites, they're invitations. Invite is a verb. Oh, you've got me going now in a whole other thing. Back to my original thing. People are given invitations, often via Eventbrite, and it becomes really easy to accept them. And also, to be fair, I understand that it's quite difficult to retract an invitation or give your apologies once you've done that through Eventbrite. But I turn up, I pick up my badge, and usually between 30 and 50% of the badges are not picked up when I arrive and are still sitting there at the end of the evening. And on some occasions, that's really not so bad. I understand they're informal get-togethers. You'll rock up if you rock up and you won't if you won't. But sometimes people have gone to a lot of time and trouble to put on catering, to put on drinks, and there's just often platters, vast oceans of food that, because of regulations and whatnot, just go completely to waste. And I was at a UKTI event recently where they'd had absolutely gorgeous catering and tray upon tray of it just sat there at the end of the event because people hadn't given apologies or hadn't explained that they couldn't stay. So, if you're going to go somewhere, make the commitment and go. If you can't go, and we know that sometimes things crop up, let people know as early as possible. I don't want to get into whether it's a generational thing, whether it's all about that, FOMO, fear of missing out. But if you're going to go, go. And that's the end of the Creative Shift rant for this time. So that's it for this Creative Shift podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.